Hey there, listeners. Vermont Edition co-host Michaela Lafrac here. The podcast you're about to listen to has been edited and condensed for clarity and brevity. Enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Connor Cyrus. For most of the country and the world, Pride is celebrated in June to mark the anniversary of the Stonewall Riots, a time when queer people protested in response to a police raid that began in the early morning hours of June 28, 1969, at the Stonewall Inn in Greenwich Village in New York City. Vermont officially celebrates its Pride in September, and that festival is next Sunday. Now, when you think about Pride, you might think about a big parade, flashy outfits, maybe even skimpy clothes, and the tunes of Robin, Beyoncé, and Madonna, to name a few. But at the heart of every Pride event is visibility and community. Today on the show, we're going to discuss community and queer spaces around the state. Vermont often touts itself as being one of the most progressive states in the union, but when you look around, there aren't many queer bars. Is that because the state is so progressive we don't need them, or do communities not support them? However, beyond the bar scenes, advocates are working to create more queer spaces around the state for all Vermonters. Our first guest today is Kim Jordan. She's the director of Safe Space Anti-Violence Program with the Pride Center of Vermont. Pride Center of Vermont is the region's most comprehensive community center dedicated to advancing community and the health and safety of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer Vermonters. Kim, welcome to Vermont Edition.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
I also want to introduce Jake McBride. He's the health justice organizer with Out in the Open. Out in the Open's mission is to connect rural LGBTQ people to build community, visibility, knowledge, and power. Jake, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Thank you for having me, Connor.
And listeners, we would love for you to weigh in on this discussion. What are your questions when it comes to queer spaces in the state? Do you think we still need them, or is Vermont more welcoming? Is Vermont welcoming enough for LGBTQ people? Give us a call, 1-800-639-2211. You can tweet us at Vermont Edition or send an email to vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. Now, Kim, I want to start with you. When it comes to creating spaces of any kind for queer people, what's the role the Pride Center plays?
Great question. So Pride Center aims to create community spaces, kindred connections, and ways that we can connect with each other within and across our LGBTQ plus identities. We have a number of programs at Pride Center of Vermont. Momentum is for LGBTQ plus folks who are age 40 and over, and it's really to build social connections, to minimize isolation, recognizing that one of the most important ways to kind of build our own individual capacities to deal with the harsh world out there is community. And knowing that we are not alone. And when we have so much of our state is rural, when especially in these still ongoing pandemic times, isolation is kind of the way that a lot of folks find the most safety. That can be really hard to realize that we're not alone. So our Momentum program is really helpful, especially for older and elder Vermonters. Our health and wellness program aims to mitigate health disparities that disproportionately impact LGBTQ plus Vermonters, and whether it's social events with like identitied folks who fall under the LGBTQ plus spectrum, also other types of social events and connection events. And our Safe Space Anti-Violence program really supports folks who experience bias, discrimination, harm, hate, abuse, and violence that not only breaks trust, and we'll get more into the concept of what safety means, but really splinters our LGBTQ plus communities, because when violence happens within our communities, it's really hard for us to find trust within each other, let alone be seen as a healthy population when there's violence that happens within our own communities. So Pride Center writ large aims to build community and support and uplift marginalized Vermonters, recognizing that there's always more and more work to do.
And then, Jake, you are with Out in the Open, and that focuses on LGBTQ in rural Vermont. What are you doing to create more spaces for queer Vermonters?
Absolutely. Thanks for asking that question. We do some in-person events, but a lot of the stuff for the past 2 years has been mostly virtual. So we have a Trans Femme Chill Club. We have a meditation club. We have some like arts programming as well, which has been really good for a lot of people who, you know, like Kim said, are very isolated, both because of the pandemic and because of their own rurality. That's a challenge that a lot of rural people all over the country face, and being queer kind of compounds that. So we're mostly based in the Wabanaki Confederacy in town of Brattleboro, Vermont, but we're expanding regionally. So we're coming up into northern central Vermont and western Vermont, and also heading into rural Maine. So we just did a summit, which was a big full day kind of like info share and community gathering. And our goals there are to really build trust in community. So some of our events, you know, are very place-based and space-based, and some of them are more community-based and can take place online. And they've been really good to kind of include folks who have been pushed out by in-person events throughout the years. And I think if there is a silver lining of the pandemic, it's that, you know, some of these events have become more accessible through online, you know, events. And so I'm encouraging us to continue that as we continue with in-person events. And I think also, you know, small queer-owned farms and homesteads play a huge part in this as well. We do not have a location as out in the open, and so we do a lot of collaboration with local community spaces and organizations, you know, to have events on farms, work days, community gatherings. We've worked with The Root in Brattleboro a lot to do community events, that kind of thing.
What are some of the challenges, right? So we're talking about rural Vermonters, especially in the queer community. I'll start with you, Jake. What are some of the challenges that come with finding community and then creating spaces for this population?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, a lot of these challenges that we find are ones that a lot of rural Americans share, things like transportation and resource access. And then when you whittle it down to a population that is not often seen or is visible in rural spaces, it becomes a lot harder. And I think there's this kind of dialogue that most LGBTQ plus, most queer people exist in urban areas. And that can be really harmful because it further invisibilizes, you know, people who live really far out and don't have access to stuff. I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
I think you got it. And so I want to hear from Kim and just hear your thoughts on what the challenges are when it comes to connecting rural queer Vermonters.
I think, you know, our identities are multifaceted. There are as many identities within the LGBTQ plus communities as there are identities within any human population. So LGBTQ plus folks are not a monolith. There are multiple marginalized and oppressed identities that folks can have within also being queer, if that's the identity that they align with. And so, someone who's rural, who is also a cisgender, white, gay man might have a lot more just positional power and access, might pass as straight when it's comfortable for him, have more kind of support in his community, as opposed to someone who might be disabled, trans, queer, Black woman, who in those same spaces might be additionally marginalized, not believed when harm happens to her, or if she wants to run for the select board, if she wants to work at the local market, if she is in the trades, she may or may not have the same support in her community, right? So if she has a trans flag on her lawn or in the window of her apartment, will she have the same support as if as someone who does not have multiple marginalized identities, even if they all fall under the LGBTQ plus umbrella? So I just want us to be mindful when we talk about rural spaces and LGBTQ plus people, that we're really aware of all the different types of rural spaces there are in Vermont, right? Bradford is different from Eden, is different from Brattleboro, is different from Newport. And there are aligned identities and belief systems and norms, as well as very different ones, even neighborhood to neighborhood. So I'm just inviting problematizing not only that word and saying it, but also the identities that we tend to lump people together with.
Listeners, right now we're speaking with Jake McBride with Out in the Open and Kim Jordan with the Pride Center. We're discussing queer spaces in Vermont, and we want to hear from you. How do you feel of the state is doing? Are there enough queer spaces? Do you miss having gay bars that are easy to access? And are gay bars even needed in the state? Give us a call, 1-800-639-2211, or send us an email to vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. Now, one thing that I want to talk about as we have this conversation is inclusivity. I think that, you know, LGBTQ people, we are always striving to be as inclusive as possible. But then when we talk about queer spaces, we are getting rid of that inclusivity. So why should we or should we not have these queer spaces that maybe exclude people who don't identify as LGBTQ? Kim, I'll start with you.
Again, I'm going to come back to with the idea of affinity space. When something is considered a safe space for LGBTQ plus folks, who is organizing that space? Who is it by? Who is it for? Who is it in collaboration with? We know that there are racist folks within our LGBTQ plus communities. There are ableist folks. There are ageist folks, right? That when we think of spaces, affinity spaces, safe spaces where queer people can gather, will it be physically accessible? How will it be shared? What will the transportation access be? So being inclusive to all can be challenging. And so I think it's important for us to be explicit when we're talking about what a safe space is and what that safety means. Something I like to think of is a space safe enough, right? We can't guarantee safety for all, but is it safe enough? And there are many spectrums of safety, physical, emotional, relational, sexual, spiritual, economic, climate. And we can't define safety for others. We can only define it for ourselves. So there could be, and I know we're going to talk about Burlington Dyke Night and Queer Nights and the brilliance of Fox Market as being a safe space. And we know that even with the best intentions, harm can happen. Unintended harm can happen. So I think it's important when we talk about the brilliance, and yes, I will say I do think there should be more queer bars, but that also centers alcohol, right, and party culture. So when harm happens, what are the supports in place that are organized so that we know that there are ways to address the harm with accountability, with repair, with transformation, so that we can continue to have affinity spaces, recognizing that it doesn't necessarily mean that every single person who falls under the LGBTQ plus umbrella will feel welcome. And then what do we do about that?
Jake, I want to turn to you and I want to talk about safety. And I think about specifically rural Vermont. I know driving through sometimes you'll see, even today you'll see Take Back Vermont signs. And for people that don't know, Take Back Vermont was a campaign that was formed because of because the state's legislature passed the law establishing civil unions back in 2000. So with those signs being up in several parts of the state, you know, specifically rural Vermont, how are you promoting safety and what does that look like?
Yeah, there are definitely some of those signs by my house. So I know those well. And it's, you know, that's something that you think about all the time when you're in rural spaces, no matter where you are. And I think this also just kind of goes back to the question that you asked prior, which is, you know, why are spaces that are specifically for LGBTQ people exclusionary? And I think that more than exclusionary, they're safe. And that's, Kim just spoke to that. You know, the vast majority of public spaces are not specifically for queer people. And those are places where you have to be on guard a lot of the time, you know, and be worried about how you're presenting, about how other people are reading you, what people are thinking and what people might do. And so to have, you know, safe spaces or queer specific spaces, it changes how other people behave in those spaces, even if they're not under the LGBTQ umbrella. You know, when they come into that space, it's understood that like this is a space that is, you know, owned and stewarded by queer people, and they're welcome as long as they are also welcoming and kind and safe. Yeah, I think that out in the open, some of our main goals are building trust in community. And so, you know, we try to foster that through our in-person events and also through like some of our virtual programming and just making connections so that there's a rural care network and people kind of, you know how to help each other out and people have people to call when they're in in a difficult situation, having those resources is so, so important.
May I add in?
Yes. Just,
I want to acknowledge that Burlington, as the largest and most populous city in the state, also is not without anti-queer rhetoric, mm-hmm. anti-queer lawn signs, anti-trans behaviors, and folks who would rather that we not exist. And so it, you know, with best intentions, we're not the most enlightened compared to the rest of the state. We're all in this struggle together and in the celebration at the same time.
Thank you for making that point. And listeners, we would love to hear from you. Give us a call, 1-800-639-2211. Let's go to Lou in Burlington. Lou, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Hey, Connor. Hey, Kim. Hey, everybody. It's nice to hear you guys talk about this on Vermont Public. I think this is a evolving conversation. I just wanted to bring to the conversation something that I guess I'm old enough now to have this perspective that since the closing of beloved 135 Pearl, which was the gay bar in Burlington for many, many, many years, there has been this evolution of community members stepping up to create pop-up events. And it's kind of continued to evolve to be identity-specific with the Burlington Dyke Nights, with Pride events happening in Bennington and White River Junction, with Queer Shakespeare events happening down in Central Vermont. It's been really lovely to see folks kind of take the reins and not be confined to just either complaining that there is no gay bar or feeling like they have to make an actual gay bar. I think that it's been lovely to see that. And yet the flip side of that is that it's so much energy to pull those things off. And I share that as someone who started pop-up queer dance party soon after Pearl's closed, trying to just create any queer space. And we tried to keep that going for about 5 or 6 years, and then it just kind of burned me out on that. So I'm wondering, for the guests you have there, can they speak to this kind of phenomenon that I'm sure they're seeing as well, as community members are kind of taking it on their own to create more queer gathering space together, and how they see that either add to their organization's impact or what? I guess I'm just curious about their thoughts.
Lou,
on that.
Thank you so much for the call. So we're talking about these pop-up spaces. You know, I can think of a few. I'm thinking of Burly Bear. I'm thinking of Burlington Dyke Night. I'm thinking of Guerrilla Queer Bar Takeover. There's a lot, but these are all run by people that aren't getting paid, that this is volunteer work, that they're setting up, building these networks. How does that impact your organization?
We're here for it. You know, there's no ownership over what makes a queer community a queer community, and for people to come out and celebrate and find kindred connection with each other. There are queer dance parties happening all over, and I think I really appreciate Lou's point that that people are being who we need to see in the world, right? If something doesn't exist, there's a dismantling of expertise that you have to have X, Y, and Z credential or a brick and mortar space or be able to afford a particular level of celebration and bling in order to host a space that LGBTQ plus people will come to celebrate and find solidarity. And it's happening everywhere. Pride Center doesn't need to be alerted to all of it. I mean, there's also queer, or I think it's specifically trans wiffle ball games that happen. Like, yes, if you want to see it, then you have the power to create it. And my assumption is that for queer and trans-friendly business owners or venue owners who want to bring more folks to their spaces, yes, open it up. And so I think that really empowers the rest of us to see how it can be done and creates a community and culture that doesn't require expertise or some hierarchy or someone to say, you're allowed to be here.
Yeah, and I think all of us at Out in the Open feel the same way. And I think that it also just speaks to the rural roots of Vermont and, you know, people making do with what they have, stepping up to help their neighbor. And that's something that is just so represented in our queer community as well as our state. I've seen so many pop-up events, just like, you know, we have queer soccer every Monday night, which is huge. And I live in Plainfield, Vermont. We have a rec field where there's always people just tossing a frisbee around, and there's group chats and people just staying in touch with each other. And I think that's what really matters, is staying in community, even if there aren't physical spaces. And that being said, I think the physical spaces also introduce people to each other. You know, as rural people, you know, we're often so isolated. And so to come to a physical space and meet other people, it opens up so many possibilities of more casual spaces that are just set up, you know, at the Grange or the local church or the park.
I just want to move on just really quickly. I want to add another voice to the conversation. Dana Kaplan is the executive director of Outright Vermont. Outright Vermont is building a Vermont where all LGBTQ plus youth have hope, equity, and power. Dana, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Hey, thanks so much, Connor. How's it going, everybody?
We're all doing great. We're just, you know, having great discussions, Dana. And I want to ask, what's the role that Outright plays in creating safe spaces for people across the state?
Yeah, thanks. That's a great question. So you just beautifully restated our mission. And I think that what is really important to remember is that LGBTQ youth are everywhere, right? Everywhere across our state. And what we know to be true is that no matter where LGBTQ youth live in Vermont, there is a disproportionate impact of violence and constant threats of harm that are coming their way. And so we know it doesn't have to be like that. We know the things that help youth find belonging, some of what Kim and Jake have already spoken to, but knowing that you've got supportive teachers to be able to talk to, knowing that you see yourself reflected in the curriculum that that you're learning. These are things that we know are critically important, and really just finding the space to be yourself amidst the harmful and stressful environment that youth are navigating on a daily basis. So for Outright, in addition to having spaces, our home base is in Burlington, but we are a statewide organization. Our strategy really is to go where youth are. And so a large part of that focus is going into school systems and really working regionally with communities to help give them the resources that they need so that youth know that they are not alone, where their identities can be celebrated, and where they know that there is a community that has their back.
Dana, I want to ask, we're running out of time, unfortunately, because I would love to just sit here and chat with you more, but I want to know, do you think there are enough queer spaces in the state, and what your thoughts are, specifically when it comes to the youth and the mission of Outright Vermont?
Yeah, I mean, the clear answer there is no, and we don't have to look farther than the Youth Risk Behavior Survey to see. When we hold the reality that LGBTQ youth are 5 times more likely to have attempted suicide in the past year than their cisgender and heterosexual peers, we are not doing enough, and we need to be doing so much more, especially as we hold this moment of the pandemic and the impact mental health-wise that it's having on youth across the state, especially when we think about the political climate that we're in right now, bills that are trying to have young people say that they can't participate in sports, that they don't have access to the bathroom that they need. Those are all critical, critical things that every youth needs in order to find safety and belonging. So until we see those numbers shift, we know that there's so much more that we need to be doing. And I think it's also just really important to say that safe space, you know, there's internal safety as well as external safety. So much of what we're trying to do is build up that inner sense of resilience, and that comes from peer connections. That comes from seeing yourself reflected in the people around you. And that's a big part of our strategy at Outright, really to help youth find joy in who they are, and to queer up what it means to get to be yourself.
To queer up what it means to be yourself. I love that. That's Dana Kaplan with Outright Vermont. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. I'm sorry it was so short.
Happy to be here.
And so I want to, before we go to some other guests, I just want to ask you guys, we haven't explicitly asked you the question, do you think there are enough queer spaces in the state?
I'm going to agree with Dana, your previous guest, to say no, and spaces to gather is one thing, right? They're also gathering spaces among folks in their living rooms. There are people who aren't interested in social events outside and dance parties and things like that, but want to do fiber arts or create queer theater group like Queer Shakespeare and other kind of activity-based affinity spaces. But what I really want to point out is that safe spaces for LGBTQ folks is one thing, but I'm also interested in us talking about safe systems. when someone experiences transphobic harm, anti-queer harm in housing, in healthcare, in our correctional facilities, in our criminal legal system, in accessing safety and support, what do they do if they are experiencing harm? How do they access what is at least assured to have an intent of safety? And if they don't feel safe, how can they be assured that other spaces will support them in that? So having safe spaces to celebrate, recognizing that people who I enter a room with will affirm who I am without questioning whether or not I know who I am is one thing, but our systems also have to be aligned with our affinities so that, you know, any of us, any of the places we occupy, any of the systems we occupy, we recognize are welcoming for trans and queer people.
I want to get your thoughts, Jake.
Yeah, I agree. I think that there aren't nearly enough spaces. And I also want to touch on something that Kim said earlier, which is that a lot of these spaces are centered around alcohol. And, you know, when you hear queer or gay spaces, you often think of a gay bar. And I think that, you know, there are so many queer youth who are looking for an outlet, who are looking for a place to, you know, build community. And it's so hard to find that. So I think, you know, having a more diverse set of spaces is really important as well. I don't necessarily think we need like a ton of more, you know, queer bars, but having more queer spaces is really important, more community centers, that kind of thing. And I want to shout out Fox Market for, you know, for being a family space. That's something they do really well. It's a place that you can go, you know, on a Friday night and get a drink with friends. And it's also a place that you can bring your kids to on Saturday for lunch. And that has been, you know, such a gift to Central Vermont.
I have a surprise for you. We will be talking to Fox Market in just a little bit. But before we go to them, I want to bring a voice to the show. I want to bring Zoo Holmstrom. They are one of the organizers of the lesbian meetup Burlington Dyke Night. Zoo, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Hi.
So, Zoo, I guess my first question, it's jarring to say Burlington Dyke Night. Are we allowed to say dyke?
I think so. I use dyke very much as, like, a identity and as a reclamation. I think of it the same way that we've reclaimed the word queer, of like dyke is just how I identify. Like that is the word that describes me the best in all ways, gender, sexuality. And so I say the word dyke, just don't be a jerk about it, you know?
Yeah. And so tell us a little bit about what Burlington Dyke Night is and who's allowed to attend.
Yeah, totally. So Burlington Dyke Night is a monthly community gathering for dykes of all genders and experiences. And the way that I sort of define that is if you feel like the word dyke applies to you, then you're welcome. It is designed to be a space for dykes, lesbians, queer women, trans people to meet, flirt, exchange numbers, build community, and like harken back to those days of like the gay bars of the 70s, 80s, 90s that were just about being in space with people that you shared a similar background with. And, you know, whether that is you make out in the bathroom or you just find somebody that's like your new chess partner, like I welcome all those kinds of connections and experiences.
And why did it start? Like, what was the need for there to be this meetup?
Yeah, I was talking with a friend of mine who organized a different event, and we were talking about what a success it was and how lovely it was to be in that space. And we started talking about other kinds of events we wanted to see. And I think she had said, like, wouldn't it be cool if we did a dyke night? And I was like, that would be really cool. What if I just did that? And it was really just like we were talking about it in a bar one day. I made an Instagram account. And then 2 weeks later, I had a date set. Because like we've been talking about, there just aren't places where you can just gather for the sake of gathering. Where there isn't like a set schedule or an itinerary or an event. It's just a place to be together in queer community.
Do you think you would, I guess I want to ask, would this be successful as a standalone bar or a standalone space? Or do you think that it can only be, it's only sustainable as a once a month event?
I mean, my whole life mission is to open up a lesbian bar. So I think that it would be sustainable as a sort of more brick and mortar space. But I think that with anything like that, the more solidified something gets, also the more fluid you need to be with it. So Dyke Night as Dyke Night, I think works great as a monthly event, but you know, an actual lesbian bar would have to look very, very different for a lot of different reasons. So it really depends on the intention behind the space, But I think that even within, like, if there was a brick and mortar lesbian space, there should still be, you know, a night every once in a while that is purely dedicated for that, like, community building aspect.
And then the last question, where can people find out more information about Burlington Dyke Night?
Yeah, you can follow us on Instagram. It's Burlington Dyke Night. We're also on Facebook at the same name. And our next event is this Monday, September 12th at 7 p.m. at the Burlington Beer Company.
That is Zoo Holmstrom, one of the organizers and the leader of Burlington Dyke Night. Zoo, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
I now want to bring on another voice, and this is going to be a familiar one for you, Jake. One of the few advertised queer bars in Vermont is Fox Market and Bar in East Montpelier. Liv Dunston is one of the co-owners, and she joins us now. Liv, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, Liv, I just want to ask, why did you start a queer bar in Vermont, especially in East Montpelier?
Well, I guess I've always wanted to build a community space, especially centered around food, since I was a young person. And I moved to Vermont about 5 years ago and found that I was really struggling to meet other members of the queer community and find a community of my own here. And so it felt like maybe I could just build one. And I was lucky to have a business partner who Donnie, who dreamed big and was able to build in a way that I couldn't. And so together we got to build Fox Market.
And will you just tell the listeners who haven't been a little bit about what Fox Market and Bar is and I guess what they should expect if they decide to go?
So Fox Market and Bar is a grocery store. We call ourselves the best gay grocery store in East Montpelier. And we are also a bar and community space. So we do serve alcohol. We're a beer and wine bar, but we also just have a really wonderful community that hangs out during the day, and we're open from 7:30 in the morning until 10 at night. And so we're, you know, we've got a lot of things going on at a lot of different times, but, we definitely consider ourselves more of a community space than a traditional bar. And yeah, that you can get a great glass of wine, but you can also have a coffee and read a book and hang out.
Was that intentional to be a community space and not just a bar? And if so, why?
Absolutely. I think for us, it was more about building a space that, you know, that we wanted to hang out at and that we our friends and family wanted to hang out at. And so that means that, you know, a friend with a five-year-old child can come hang out here just as comfortably as a young couple on a date or anyone else.
And what do you, and how, I guess, how has it been received and what, how's it going?
It's going great. We could not be more pleased with just the love and support we've received from the community. It's been incredible. I think it's gone above and beyond our sort of wildest expectations of what it could be. And we're growing a little bit every day and changing a little bit and finding new ways to do new fun things.
That is Liv Dunston, one of the owners of the Fox Market and Bar in East Montpelier. Liv, thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you.
So now I want to go back to you. Like, how do y'all respond to hearing, you know, we just spoke to Liv and Dana and Zoo. How do you respond to, like, how the conversation is going and what these people are doing in our community?
I absolutely love the attitude that they all bring, which is, it wasn't there, so I created it. And I think that that also just, you know, speaks to us in rural Vermont, making do with what we have and building new things when they're not already in place. Fox Market is so close to my heart and also close to my home, which I'm very grateful for. I never imagined that I could live 10 minutes from, you know, a queer bar, community space, and grocery store, and also live rurally. That is just a dream come true. And I'm, you know, so incredibly grateful for that.
What listeners can't see is that when Zoo came on and when Liv came on, both Jake and I each put our hands to our hearts and like rubbed our hearts, literally heartwarming and soothing to my soul, recognizing that, yes, if it doesn't exist, I can build it and others will join me in that And then that's how, like, revolution happens. That's how affirmation happens. That's how validation happens. And then we realize when we're not alone and there are others like us and we have a space to be, then what else is possible? What else can happen in that community space? Not only maybe planning for what else the community needs that like-minded folks can create, what doesn't exist that could, what does exist that could be better. It really is a fostering, nurturing ground that is very much like very Vermont, right? It's just so fertile.
Fostering. As we start to wrap up this conversation, I want to look and discuss Pride for a little bit. Because a lot of Vermonters are going to be celebrating Pride next Sunday. And for listeners that don't know, me and Jane Lindholm will be hosting the Pride Festival. So really excited about that. But Pride also, while there's a lot of smiling, happy faces, it also can be triggering for some people. Because people get left out of the conversation and get left out of the community. And I want to just bring some reality to what a lot of people see as a joyous occasion. So I just want to know, if Kim, what your thoughts?
I'm kind of surprised. I mean, I guess if people who are triggered are people who don't identify as LGBTQ+ and who don't want to join in celebration that all identities centering LGBTQ+ folks deserve to be visible, recognizing that Pride is still protest, right? Pride is still shut down in many places in the country. Protesters do exist who don't want us to thrive. So if the people who are triggered are not allies and kind of accomplices in queer liberation, and I don't know what to tell them, maybe get out of town for the week. because, you know, this is Pride Week. Pride Week starts tonight, actually. And there are events in central and northern Vermont happening. Feel free to check out the full calendar at pridevt.org. Wanted to give that plug. But I think if anybody has a hard time with others celebrating without an intent to cause harm to anyone, but to celebrate and uplift the most marginalized among us, then that's some of their like internal work about why they're triggered. And I would even challenge the word triggered. Are they just annoyed?
Yeah, and I love that. And also, I think, you know, there are people under the LGBTQ umbrella who might be triggered by Pride. And I think a lot of that stems from invisibility. And I know that's something that I experience, and not that cisgender men need to take up a lot more space in queer spaces. But I also think that, you know, we have this image through a lot of our popular culture and popular media of who, you know, what a queer person looks like, what a gay person looks like. And so often it's like, a white, cisgender, young, gay man.
Generally chiseled,
you know. And I just think that can often ostracize people, people of different sizes and colors and creeds. And also I think class plays a huge role in it as well. So I'm excited to see Pride become more inclusive as we move forward. But I think that, you know, being a brown queer Vermonter, there are a lot of queer spaces queer spaces in Vermont that I feel like are not accessible to me or not safe for me. So I'm looking forward to more places like Fox Market that I know are safe for not only queer people, but for brown people. And like, they play my music and I can feel comfortable. And I also think that, you know, we need to kind of look back at the history of Pride too. And it's not just about banks giving out wristbands and water bottles. And it's actually about the history. And like you said, Kim, it's still a protest. And that there's a history of queer spaces in Vermont and there will be a future of queer spaces in Vermont. And one of those, to name them, is the Andrews Inn in Bellows Falls. And if you want to look up weareoutintheopen.org, you can learn more about a queer bar in the 70s in Bellows Falls, Vermont. And a lot of that history has been purposefully covered up. And so a lot of my colleagues have done a lot of work to uncover that and do an oral history project on it that is intergenerational.
That's Jake McBride with Out in the Open. Jake, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
We also have Kim Jordan. Kim, 30 seconds, final thoughts.
final thoughts are that the first Vermont Pride happened in 1983, and we are still going strong. Know that there are places for you to be celebrated. If you fall under the LGBTQ plus umbrella, reach out to us at Pride Center, and know that there are going to be more and more spaces that can be created if you are someone who wants to create it. We're here for you.
Kim Jordan with the Pride Center, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.